Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, Sean O'Hara is with us. Let's get a little football in with Sean. Sean, obviously NFL Network. NFL Network, they have the Eagles and the Jaguars this Sunday, 9:30 from London. So, and it's a pivotal game because the Eagles are obviously struggling, which I thought they would after the Super Bowl. It's a very, very normal thing. And the Jaguars, who are a complete mess. Sean, welcome. How are you?
Hey, Mike. I'm doing well.
All right, I don't want to talk about the Giants because it's too obvious. But right now, I'll get to that at the end. But let me start with the Jaguars.
All right.
The Jaguars are – you got them Sunday in the 9:30 game, and you'll do a lot on them before your game Sunday morning. The Jaguars are, A, as messed up as a team can be. You have a house divided where the defense is calling out the offense. You have a talky corner who's the biggest mouth in the whole league, and he talks incessantly about everybody. You have Bortles, who was told by an edgy head coach, "Hey, go in there and don't mess up because you're on a short leash." Bortles calls himself a scapegoat. So he goes in with virtually no confidence and no vote of confidence. There's a huge division in the locker room, which Campbell even admitted he has to try and calm down. The offense, they've now gone from being a Super Bowl contender after week three to a mess now trying to save their season. They hear that they might be looking to trade for anywhere for a quarterback before Tuesday. What do you think? How salvageable is the Jacksonville season?
Well, I think for them, they've lost their identity. I can't believe we're going into week eight and the Jaguars still don't have a 100-yard rusher.
Yeah, Fournette's been hurt the whole time. He had the hamstring and then they put him back too soon, and now he's not playing until week 10. So he's a Met. Now they just signed Hyde. He'll be there this week.
That's how they won games last year. They pounded the heck out of the football, and then they played small ball. They threw some play action passes to their tight ends, and they didn't do a whole lot offensively. But they took care of the football, and they took care of the quarterback, and then they let their defense just take over the game. And that's how they won a lot of games. So, their identity this year is completely different. They're not committed to the run because of the injuries, like you just mentioned. They've not just injuries at running back. I mean, T.J. Yeldon has been banged up. It's been a rotation there. But they're down two left tackles already.
Right, and their guy very well. He's your coach, and he's a very good offensive line coach. And he usually is good at patching things.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, at some point you run out of fingers when you're plugging holes. But to lose two left tackles like that, I mean, and things have gotten so bad down there that they actually signed Eric Flowers.
Yes.
This offense is just it doesn't look like the offense that they had last year. And defensively, to give up the big plays that they've given up in that secondary is it doesn't look like the defense that we thought we would see this year.
No, it doesn't. And the talky corner never mentions what happens on the defensive side of the ball either. Too busy throwing guys under the bus.
Well, I think that's probably what is frustrating for everybody there is, look, you win some games last year, everybody talks about, hey, look, nobody respects us, and then now all of a sudden everybody's picking you to be one of the favorites, this is why success is one of the toughest things to handle. We heard Doug Marrone talk about it after the year and coming into this year about how, look, we've got the same mindset, but I think this team, I think a trip like London sometimes can bond a team. I remember we played in the very first London game in 2007, the first time anybody ever did that in the NFL. And that trip, look, it wasn't a great game. We barely beat the Miami Dolphins. Eli Manning actually rushed for a touchdown, and he still bragged about it weeks later because he outran Jason Taylor. But that game and that trip, we really kind of bonded as a team. So, maybe that's something that Jacksonville can hang their hat on.
And conversely, here and now are the Eagles, who come into that game having blown a 17-0 lead at home to Carolina, And not only 17-0, a 17-6 lead where they have the ball with 7 minutes left, and they still lose the game.
Yeah, that was pretty remarkable. You know, I think Carson Wentz is probably still kicking himself because he had a guy wide open in the middle of the field on that last play, and he just couldn't get the ball to him in time. I never thought that I would see them get shut out like that in the fourth quarter. I think Philadelphia will be okay if they can do one thing, and they've got to just find a way to protect Carson Wentz. This offensive line's got to step up. They've played better this, you know, as the last couple of weeks, but this year, you know, they didn't start out very well, and they were really struggling. Obviously, they moved Sam Alu in at left guard. They have not been able to run the football. I think they had 50 yards rushing last week against Carolina. So they've been much more one-dimensional this year than they were last year, and that's got to stop. They can't – if you're going to throw the ball 45 times against Jacksonville's defensive line, they're going to get home, and that's what they can't do. They can't allow that to happen. But I know Jacksonville likes – They like to run a lot of zone and cover three stuff. So I think Zach Ertz can really, you know, he could have a big day as long as they can give him time to get open.
Talking with Sean O'Hara, of course, NFL Network. You can see him there during the week and on the weekend. And the NFL Network carries the Eagles and the Jaguars this Sunday from London at 9:30. Hey, you know this. It's really hard the year after you win a Super Bowl. It's really hard. You've had a big, long off season, a very one where you've satisfied, and it's human nature. It's very hard for a collective group the year after a Super Bowl. And you know, he made a weird statement. He said the pressure's, you know, there's no pressure on our team. You know, the pressure's off. I don't know if the pressure's off, but it's kind of. But you know, there's expectations. But it's a hard thing to. That's why I just didn't expect a big season this year. I just think it's hard when you have that magical season to try and come back and do it again if you don't have a dynasty type team.
Well, it's hard. It's hard physically because, you know, you definitely played a lot more football. You know, you maybe don't get, you know, maybe things, the cumulative effect of things kind of add up. But it's also, you know, the added dimension for the Eagles is, you know, Carson Wentz, you know, got hurt.
Yep.
So I feel like Doug might have been speaking towards Carson Wentz when he said, hey, look, the pressure's off here. Let's not try to repeat last year. I mean, last year Carson Wentz had an MVP-type season. And he might be pressing to try to get back to that. And look, I know him and Nick Foles have a great relationship. They get along, and that's why it worked. But you never want to see somebody else doing your job better than you do your job. And I think that's, you know, something that Carson Wentz, you know, maybe he's been trying to press with that. I think obviously coming back his first couple of games, you know, he didn't look comfortable in the pocket. It looked like the game was a little bit quicker than he had remembered. It has slowed down for him, but I think for this whole team, when you go into the season and now you know you're getting everybody's best shot every single week, emotionally it's draining, physically it can be draining, and mentally as well. I will say this. I think their defense is built to carry this team as much as they need. They're doing a great job against the run. And here we are second year in a row. They're leading the league in quarterback hits. So they're still getting pressure. That's always how you win football games. If you can get to their quarterback and stop the run, you're giving your offense a chance.
Talking with Sean O'Hara. All right, let's get to the Giants. Now, this week, there's no way to hide it. They're clearly, when you take a starting corner and take one of the top run stoppers in the league off your team after seven games, you're obviously looking at next season. I don't care. You can spin it any way you want. It's, you know, if it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. I mean, that's all there is to it. I mean, they're starting to think about next year after seven games. There's a lot of football left to play this year.
Yeah, there is. There's a lot of ball, and I think that there's, you know, probably still some good that can come out of it. You know, I think when you look at what they just allowed against the Atlanta Falcons, I mean, they allowed some big plays. They allowed 11 plays over 15 yards against the Falcons offense, and 10 of them were passes. So to lose your starting corner, you know, I'll say this. I don't know that the Giants were actively looking to trade those guys, but when the phone call comes and you've got an opportunity to build some assets to move forward for next year, I think the offers were, you know, were something that they felt like they couldn't pass up. Some of them were economical, too. I think Snacks was much more of an economical decision given his contract. But, you know, a guy like Snacks, I mean, he's one of the reasons why the Giants' run defense has been so good. And I know those are. It's tough to do that, especially during the season, and it is a tough message now if you're the head coach to stand up there in front of the team and say, "Hey, look, these games are important, and we got to go out and win." But I like Pat Shurmur. I think he's got a good grasp of the team, of the locker room, of the mindset that these players need to have. Now I think they just need to pay it off. And you know, to me, there's nothing frustrating than hearing a coach tell a player something on the field and in the meeting room, and then they go out there on the game field and they blow it. And you say, look, did you tell a guy something? I told him 5 times. Well, coaches will say, well, you should have told him 6 times. That's just the way they're wired. But this team, Mike, has not gotten better. And when you see the mistakes the first couple of weeks, there were a lot of them that I said, hey, look, that guy got beat, or you know, he got beat mentally, or this guy gave up a sack physically. It'll get better. Well, it just hasn't gotten better. I mean, just watched last night a Houston Texans team that was 0-3. Yep. They looked awful. I mean,
their
week 2 and 3.
Was getting killed.
Oh, man. I mean, the offensive line couldn't protect them. And I said they might not win a game this year. And here they rattled off 5 wins because they got better.
They got better.
The players that stood up and became accountable. So that's really where the Giants, where they're at right now. Now, the one thing that I've been frustrated with all week, all season long, is I just feel like, here we are going into week 8, and Saquon Barkley still has not had a 20-carry game. How is that possible? I don't understand why that's not more of an emphasis. And
well,
I'm not talking about shotgun first down
runs. I'm going to tell you the answer. I think I can give it to you, number one. Number one, they've trailed for 285 minutes, the longest of it, more than any other team in the league, and sometimes by big margins. And number two, they have been so bad when they gave them the ball on first down. They never can run the ball on second down. They never, if I give you their first and tens, they never gain any yardage on first down.
Well, a lot of it is because, you know, if you do a first or second down run on a shotgun, it's a totally different mindset, and it's a different run game. You know,
you want to go to a different running scheme, is what you're saying.
When you know you've got, you know, this season you're starting 5 new offensive linemen, and then in week 3 you've lost 2 more guys. Now you got Wheeler in the right tackle; they're on their third center.
Right.
You know, I would, as an offensive lineman, and look, we have not played a lot of football together. Let's pound the rock. And you know what? If it's three rushes and a punt, that's okay to start the game, and let's kind of get into some rhythm. And you know, I thought we would see more 2 tight end, fullback tight end formations and personnel.
Problem is their premier tight end doesn't block.
Well, I think Evan Engram is a better blocker than people maybe.
But I mean, he's not a guy you would think of as he's not in there to block. You know that he's a quasi wide receiver playing tight ends.
I've talked to Evan Engram, and you know what? He takes a lot of pride in blocking, and I think that that to me is a misstatement if you say Evan Engram doesn't like to block.
I didn't say he didn't like to block. I said, but that's not what you're using him for. I mean, they don't think of him that way. They think of him as a guy we can get in the patterns. That's what they think of him for. You know that
he's definitely more of a dynamic receiver. But Rhett Ellison is a phenomenal blocker.
No, he's a terrific blocker. I agree. Yeah.
So I think that that's something that I'm surprised that they haven't used that more often. And I think Saquon Barkley, he gets stronger as the game goes on. And when I look at teams that start wearing defenses down, that's how you do it. So I'm surprised that they haven't done that more often. Now, you mentioned the negative runs, and look, down in Carolina they had 5 negative runs in that game, and those
last
are
week
things
they
that
had
kill
a ton
you.
Of them too.
Yeah, they're not good enough to be in 2nd and 13 and 3rd and 9 and convert,
and they've trailed for 285 minutes, longer than any other team in the league.
Yeah, that's I think that they've been, you know, they've been in some games, and this, you know, they're a 63-yard field goal away from beating Carolina, who just beat.
They should, that game hurt them a lot because it really – I don't think they overcame that game. They needed that game. They had a lot of controversy that week. They had the comeback with Eli. They should have won that game, and I thought that was an unlucky hit to their solar plexus. If they had won that game, the Philly game might have been a different game. I just think that game just ripped the heart out of this team, and it didn't have a lot to give after that. I just think that came at the worst moment. They got very unlucky to get hit with a 63-yard field goal.
Yeah, and they finally offensively, scored some points.
Yeah.
You score 30 points and you lose.
And they came from 15 back. You know, they scored 15 points with 7 minutes left to take the lead. They're up 31-30. You think they're going to win the game, and they get hit with a 63-yard field goal.
Yeah. You know, that one was tough. And then, even the Saints game, I think if you would have told somebody that they would hold Drew Brees to 3 field goals in the first half on 4 different red zone possessions, You would have said that they had a good chance to win that game too. So there's times where they are a good team, but they're still learning, you know, how to try to finish games. And it's, you know, look, they've had a tough schedule too. I mean, their last four opponents playoffs last year.
They had the toughest schedule in the league the first 7 weeks, I thought, going into the season. It didn't turn out to be as tough as we thought in a couple of spots, but I still think it was a very hard schedule. I totally agree, but they're 1-6, Sean, and Eli's been sacked a gazillion times. They're 1-6, and let's be honest, to be fair, and you know this, this offensive line hasn't gotten any better. I mean, they've shuffled guys, but they haven't gotten any better. They didn't look better in the Atlanta game. They looked terrible.
Yeah, it's been tough to watch because, you know, it's not one guy.
Even Solder didn't play well on Monday night. He didn't play well.
Well, Solder, listen, the thing that Nate Solder did a great job of throughout his career when he's in New England was he's extremely athletic, and he does a great job of running the edge rushers by the quarterback. And when the quarterback steps up, it works out great. But if your guard's getting beat and your center are not passing off a twist, there's nowhere for the quarterback to step up. Now your left tackle, he ends up giving up the sack because the guy he's trying to run by,
right?
You know, there's nowhere for the quarterback to step up. So it makes him look bad. And they're taking turns. I call it the my bad syndrome. And right now it's, hey, the left tackle gets beat, comes back, to huddle, my bad. Then the left guard gets beat three plays later. He comes back and he says, my bad. The quarterback and the receiver are not on the same page. Everybody comes back to the huddle saying, my bad. Well, you do that 10 times in a game and you lose. And now, you know, you're sitting there at 1-6 and you're looking around saying, how did this happen? Everybody can't take turns messing up. This team is, you know, they're not good enough to overcome 10 mistakes, whether they're, you know, 10 mentals or 10 physicals. And until they get that corrected, you know, it's going to be the same product. Now, look, they're starting their third center. You see things that show up, and it's like, yep, you know what? That looks like an offensive line that hasn't played a lot of snaps together. And when you get a defensive line that's coming in saying, hey, we're playing the Giants this week, you know what we're going to get? We're going to get a lot of twists.
Because that's the one thing that's tough
to pass off if you're not used to working with the guy next to you.
What do you see when you looked at Hernandez this year? What have you seen, positive, negative?
Well, I like Will, man. I think I love his mindset. I love his demeanor. I love everything that he brings
to
that
group. Has he gotten beat too much this year? Has he gotten beat clean too many times? Because those are the ones that we've noticed and that have looked really bad on TV. Now, overall, he's graded out okay, but I know that from, you know, he's the highest graded rookie in the league, but I can think of a lot of plays where he didn't make the play.
You know, when the Giants drafted Will Hernandez, you know, and I went back and was, you know, watching a lot of his film at UTEP, I mean, I saw a guy that just, you know, I mean, he was a who's next kind of guy, you know.
Like a road grader, yeah.
I mean, he finished his guy, and then he'd get up and say, yeah, I want seconds. You know, and I see that mentality in him still, and I like the way he finishes, and I like the way that he plays, his combination blocks. I mean, I think he and Nate Solder, you know, everybody says, well, they got a plan for the future. Look, the Giants are set on the left side for the future. Now, Will Hernandez has gotten beat, and you know what? He's a rookie guard. You turn on film, Quentin Nelson, I mean, he was a top five pick.
Yep.
Top six pick, maybe. He's gotten beat inside. And you know what? He's gotten beat by the inside move a number of times. So it happens. I remember when Chris Snead came in, you know, as a second-round pick, and I remember early on I said, boy, this kid's special. He's one of the strongest guys I've ever played with, and he's a stud. And you know what? I mean, there was a couple times where he got beat too. Now, Will Hernandez is not the kind of guard you want. You don't want to throw the ball 45 times with a guy like
You want to
especially
run.
Not yep. early on.
Yep.
He's been victimized a little bit, and the tough thing is, look, if you get beat inside early on in the season, and it's on tape, everybody's going to try you.
Right.
And you know, when you go shotgun and when you go empty formation on first down and you telegraph that it's a pass, well, the guy across from you, he's already licking his chops and he's teeing off on you. And that's happened a couple times and he's lost. I don't look at that like this is something he can't fix and he can't get better at. He's strong enough. He's athletic enough. He'll be fine. You know, I think it's more just, you know, how do you get the best out of your offensive line? How do you get the best out of Will
Hernandez? Let me ask this question. We're talking with Sean O'Hara, of course, as we pass 5 o'clock here on the fan, WFAN in New York. Now, is there a fallback position for all offensive lines where we can say, let's go back to here and we can always get that done on an NFL level? Or is that not even, there is not even that fundamental level for an offensive line even as that's playing badly? Is there a, can you get it to a certain level where we can all do this? This is what we know we can do, or there's nothing you know you can do?
Well, I feel like the one thing that if your offensive line is struggling that you always go back to is running the football and trying to find a way to move the pocket in the passing game. And if you run the ball on first and second down and you find a way to create some play action moves, you know, you're gonna increase your percentages of, you know, obviously the quicker throws,
yeah,
but
you're letting your offensive line be aggressive. All year. That's what you hoped that they were going to do. They have not been able to get the play action this year. I bet you that if somebody charted it, they have fewer second and third shorts than any team in the league.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the one thing that's been frustrating to go along with that is, you know, there's been a number of times that Saquon had a 12 or 13 or 14 yard run. And then, you know, you come back and you throw the ball three times in a row.
Right.
And I felt like the Houston game was the one time where they started to get rhythm.
That was the best pass. That was the best run blocking game they had all year, no question.
Yeah, and they went back to it. They went back to back runs. I mean, I don't think Saquon Barkley has still had three consecutive carries. He's had three touches in a row, but
right.
He's not had three consecutive runs in a row. And that is mind boggling to me. And look, that's not going to fix everything because, you know, look, there's still some other issues, you know, offensively. But, you know, this is a new offense. It's a new offense for everybody. And I think we still see some missed throws. We still see some missed routes. I don't know how Odell and Evan Ingram, how these guys are still not on the same exact page as your quarterback and being where your quarterback needs you to be every single time. Those are things that, you know, should be ironed out by this time as well. So it's not just on the O-line.
Okay. I mean, hey, you know, what do you think about, I mean, as someone who has been with Eli and won with Eli, this is a tough spot for the franchise, tough spot for him. You have a legacy player here who's, you know, we don't know how it's going to finish. This year was supposed to be a different year. What's your thoughts about that as you watch it unfold?
Well, it's really tough to kind of define on a macro level, you know, what does this mean, you know, and how do you handle it going forward? You know, I mean, week in and week out, I turn on the film, and I see a quarterback that could still throw the ball.
No question.
At the second half when all of a sudden the pocket calmed down and things settled down a little bit, and, you know, Eli started making some big throws. And that's the Eli that I think everybody is trying to get. You know, I feel like Eli has been traumatized. And when you think about the accumulation of all the hits and the sacks he's taken over the last few years, why should he stand in there and trust the pocket? I mean, it hasn't been there. So that's something that he's going to have to overcome, and he's going to have to find a way to, you know, to just sit in there. And you know what? If you end up taking one in the chops, you take one in the chops. But I think that's why I feel like they're doing him a disservice by throwing the ball so early on in the game and letting defenses tee off on him. Everybody knows what's going on. They see it. I think Eli still has a lot of good football left in him. And I know a lot of people are arguing that right now, and they think he's done. I don't think he's done. I think if everybody in that building watched the film and they said, man, you know what? Eli's done. They would have already pulled him. They would have already put Alex.
No, he can make. Listen, anyone who knows anything about football knows he can still throw the football. That's not a question. I mean, now if you want to say that he needs to stand in there and take hits, you know, when I present it to him, he says, "Hey, I got sacked 25 times this year. How many times do you want me to stand in there and take the ball, you know, and you know, hold the ball longer? You know, I'm getting rid of the ball too quickly. How many times, if I don't get rid of the ball, how many times do you want me to get sacked? You know, and I understand that. And then they'll say, oh, he's not. He's looking at the rush. He's not looking downfield. Well, you know what? I feel like when they block the play, he can throw it. And the question is, he's not mobile. He's not going to see. You know what they want him to do? They want him to evade a guy and go out and then roll out and make the throw. That's not what he does. That's not who he is. I mean, that's just not who he is.
Well, it's not. And you know what? Everybody wants the mobile quarterback. Well, guess what? Mobile quarterbacks are coming off ACLs: Deshaun Watson and Carson Wentz. So you know, it's a take 22 if you want a guy that can run around. He's going to get hurt too. So. You know, it's that one's tough. I think when I look at Eli and the fact that he got sacked four times in the first half, you know, that to me is how you that's how you get a quarterback shaky in the pocket. And listen, if the sacks happen in a 2 minute drive or at the end of the game when everybody knows you're throwing the ball, that's one thing. But for them to happen in the first half on first and second down, I mean, you go through and you look at all the sacks, the majority of the sacks on Eli are on first and second down.
They are, so yeah. And a lot of them are early in the game,
that's on
too.
The tight end, that's on everybody.
And a lot of them are early in the game.
Yeah, and that's stuff that you can control, by in varying ways. Different play calls, different personnel, different, different mindset.
Well, listen, good to talk to you. Thanks. We'll chat again. Good luck with the show this weekend. We'll talk soon. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Sean O'Hara, NFL Network. Jaguars and the Eagles, which is a good game. You know, the Jaguars think London's their home anyway because of their owner. You know, he actually plays with the idea of playing all his home games in London someday. I don't know if it's still in his head. It used to be in his head. I don't know if it's still in his head. Could be, but that's why, you know, they love going to London to play. Back after this.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.